This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And good morning, my friend. It is 6 minutes after 9 o'clock here on this Wednesday, December 29th, as we get ready to wrap up the 2010 year. Welcome to the Wednesday Morning Talk Show. I'm Terry Tote. My partner in crime, Uncle Ralph Niehaus, has the day off today. And we are joined in studio by Nick Prattner. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Terry. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's great to have you in studio. Nick is an author, has written a book, and we've been talking about a myriad of subjects here in the past 10 minutes or so, and who knows what we might touch on
yeah.
today.
Yeah.
But it's good to have Nick back in the area, and we'll talk a little bit to him. Today's program brought to you by the Plummer Funeral Home in Litchfield. We'll be back to chat in 30 seconds.
At Plummer Funeral Home, we invite you to visit our website at plummerfuneralservices.com. Since we first began, we've been dedicated to serving local families with the utmost respect and attention. Our website is just another step in bringing the very best in funeral services to this area. In addition to the most current obituary information, our website offers some basic pre-planning guidelines to help you begin the funeral planning process. Plummer Funeral Home, the locally owned hometown funeral home, your neighbor and your friend.
Back on the Wednesday Morning Talk Show here on this 29th day of December, Nick Prattner joining us in studio. Nick from the area, from TS.
TS, good old TS.
Do people say, Taylor Springs, what's that?
When you
went to college, did they say that?
People said what, where, who, how, but when. I mean, people, I told so many, actually, and in Going Nowhere here, there's one story. I probably can't read it during daytime radio, but there's one story that, I actually wrote down that I told about going and some friends of mine, we used to go torment this guy down in another small town south of Taylor Springs, and we called him Mr. Miyagi, and he would chase people off the road. We would do all this, high school kids doing stupid things.
But. Oh, I like to say I'm glad I've never done anything stupid like that in the last two minutes,
Yeah.
but anyway, Nick, let's go back a few years. Out of high school, went to college.
I graduated from HHS, Hillsborough High School, 2005, went to the University of Missouri. I graduated from the University of Missouri in 2007, but I never got a diploma, You see. I wrote my own diploma out. I graduated so that I could write this book,
right.
Basically. I was very antsy, restless, and I'm very glad that I made that decision because I've honestly consumed a lot more intellectual material, written a lot more than when I was in school, just regurgitating things. And I feel I've also had time to encounter some teachers of sorts. Some earthly teachers, I would say. An old man named Abraham, who actually had a long white beard. And he taught me how to meditatively compose so that I would discover what lies inside me.
Well, it's all a process where in the grade school, high school level, you get introduced to certain things.
You do.
You get to college. And college is not so much about learning, but allowing you to explore different ideas, different avenues, and basically allowing you to make up your mind whether or not you want to absorb
this. Well, it used to be more, I don't know, because I'm only 23, but from what I gather, college used to be more about exploring yourself. And what I saw was it was an extension of high school, where high school is very necessary to prepare you for performing a functioning role within society. Strict regimens that you go through, you turn in your assignments on time, and there's very clear and cut consequences to what you do, and that's very necessary. People need that in order to grow up and be a functioning human being. But in college, I feel like if you haven't learned that yet, then you probably shouldn't be in college, because college is something where you focus, you should be able to focus on a particular aspect that you want to know about, but also grow internally, your internal knowledge. And it's more about learning a trade now than actually intellectual, like flowering, so to speak,
Right. I think you're right. And with my kids, and I'll talk from a parental standpoint, my kids, the only advice I gave them is live it to the hilt, because this is an opportunity that a lot of people will not get to go to college. You're going to liberal arts schools, and they're both writers, want to be teachers, I think, probably somewhere down the line. And talk to as many different people with as many different ideas from as many different backgrounds that you can get and postulate your own theory of how things ought to be. Don't Yes. listen to me just because I'm dad. Listen to me and take that into account and then make your own decision.
Yeah, and that's like what liberal arts education means. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean liberal in any political sense.
No.
Liberal is an
and
open.
And people want to confuse that.
Yeah, it's liberal as in the actual, what it says in the
right.
dictionary.
Right.
The definition of the word liberal, open.
Open.
You have to be open to everything around you and interpret it subjectively always, but try to be objective.
And as part of that, Nick, there are going to be things that might offend you or things that you definitely don't agree with.
But you have to, the most important thing is to figure out why.
Why you don't?
They
like
don't. They offend you, and it's usually something about you is why it offends you. Mm-hmm. It's you discover a lot about yourself that way.
You and it's like looking in a mirror, and you're going, "Oh my God,
yeah."
Part of that is me. And
yeah,
I don't like that.
Yeah, and then you do something about it.
I don't know about, and you're only 23, and I'm old, but but it still happens to me almost every day.
You know,
something will happen, and you'll say something. I'm going, "You know, why did I say that? Because I wouldn't want that said to me," and just. Dumb little things that being human, we humans tend to do things like that, and I'm a classic for, you know, foot and mouth disease, so being in the business that I'm in.
I hope not the disease. I don't think that's come to America yet. But.
well, I mean, you know, open
yeah,
up
yeah,
there,
yeah. I know, it's good. I like it. Good metaphor.
Saying something really stupid, which, you know, I've got some great stupidity things that I've said over the years. So and I know for a long time you've wanted to write and you've written a book here.
Yeah.
But let's get you some background. You had a wonderful base of experience.
Oh my God!
Through your high school years and college.
Nancy and Richards. When I was 12 years, well, no, I was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. It had been 1990, spring of 1998, because it was the year Mark McGuire hit 62.
Yeah,
I remember
yeah.
this, and I was in fifth grade, and I was keeping score. During a fifth grade basketball tournament.
Yeah.
And Nancy came up and asked me how to spell all these names. Mm-hmm. Schwarzkopf,
yeah.
Tekin,
yeah.
all these names of kids in my class. So I spelled them out for her and I wrote them down. She's like, "Well, how would you like to write junior high sports for us next year?" And I was like, "I don't know." And then I went home. My dad's like, "You better take that. That's a good idea. You should do that, blah, blah, blah." And so I called her next week and I was like, "Yeah, I'll do it, you know." And so then I started writing junior high sports stories for the Hillsborough Junior High Dragons. Not the Dragon Beat's at the Journal. This is at the old Montgomery County News.
This is the old Montgomery County News.
Do Dragon Beat my eighth grade year at the Journal. I wrote for both papers.
Yeah, okay.
But I did the daily weekly thing at the News. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to high school, they gave me a column and started doing other stories. But the breadth of that experience... Like, when I was a senior in high school at the Journal News, and we combined those papers, and I was basically just, I had me and Mr. D and Mike Plunkett and Pavel Slepichka were doing the sports stuff, and I would just go wherever, I would just drive to whatever game, wherever it was, and I would just go and do it, and I got to know all the coaches. It was just, I had so much fun there doing that, especially my senior year when I really got to, when there were other people working. And I just could pick whatever I wanted, and knowing that Mike's like, "Yeah, that's fine. I'll just go cover the game in town here." And then because I didn't at the Montgomery County News, if there was a game in Hillsborough, I always had to be there. So I couldn't go to the good game in Riverton where Nokomis was playing or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you refined some skills. Learned about talking to people.
Oh yeah.
And listening to people.
Oh yeah. I mean. What it really, like, Going Nowhere, my novel here, is written from, there's a lot of dialogue. It's mostly dialogue. And I learned how to write dialogue by interviewing people. And then, you know, I would insert descriptions of what was going on in the game. Because if you're interviewing a coach, you're talking about the game. So all the coach's words are about the game. Well, then I realized, you know, as I started practicing actually just writing about conversations that I'd had, instead of the conversation itself was a game. So you could insert the descriptions of what's going on in the conversations just as I would in a news article.
Sure.
Of course, you wouldn't have the restrictions of, you know, verbiage,
mm-hmm.
of usage of words, and I colloquialize things. A major goal when I was writing this was to try to capture exactly how people talked.
their conversational style.
Yeah, and there's a lot. There's some conversations with some very impoverished, lower-class African-Americans in Cairo, Illinois. Mm-hmm. Capturing how they talk is, well, that was quite a challenge. And
But that's all part of the educational process.
Yeah, the self-ed, yeah, and essentially.
Yeah, something that the more we know about each other, the better off we're going to be, I rather suspect.
Yeah.
I think that's a good metaphor for humanity.
Yeah.
If I can take a huge step back Well, the education process never stops.
Well, it doesn't ever, no. If it shouldn't.
It shouldn't.
No.
We should continue to strive to learn about others, other trains of thought. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens too much in America today. We get pigeonholed into one
specific thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, the political parties are a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And with so many various media outlets just pounding.
Although I'm surprised. They change so much, like, every day. You know.
But that's a whole other
story. That is a whole other story.
When did you actually start putting the book together, Nick?
That? Okay. Oh, let's see.
How long did the process take?
Well, a lot of it was written as I was in Cairo. Not a lot of it, a little bit of it. Some of it are interviews I just transcribed from a tape recorder, which took place in the summer of 2007.
Okay.
Then I got out of school on Halloween 2007, which was an interesting time, and transformed into the Shadow Man. And I started to just write all day, every day. And I have boxes of stuff, of what I call crap, that I'm on a little vacation here, and I'm going to go home and destroy them from this time period in the winter.
Please don't. Don't do that.
Oh,
don't do that.
Don't do
you
that.
You will be sorry.
I probably will regret it.
You
That's
will
true.
Regret it. If you take away one thing from me today, don't do that. Don't destroy the stuff. If you have to rent a storage space and store it away, do that.
Oh, it's just, it's like, in my mind, it's like a wall.
I know. Well,
that, and that's, well, anyway, but that, after I, this whole winter, there was, it was, the winter of 2008 was just one of the most amazing times in my life, because I was just living and working and just, that's all, and writing, and that's all I was doing. And, you know, heartbroken in love, all that sort of crap that happens when you're young. And we had some,
which everybody goes
I encountered
through.
A very idealistic guy named Sam Combs, who disappeared from the face of the earth and was trying to enact all this social change and peace and love, harmony. And then in the spring, after everything fell apart, this was the coldest winter of my life, but after everything fell apart, I started reflecting back on some things that had happened to me in the last few years, and I started writing them out into these big, long things. And I did that for a while, and then basically I just kept writing. I went on, did some things here and there, blah, blah, blah. About February 2009, I decided to start sorting through all the documents I had. So I had boxes of documents.
Hey, we're talking not just two boxes. We're probably talking lots of boxes.
Three boxes. Some stuff that wasn't printed. I bought I started putting them together and piling all these documents together to try to get, in my mind, there was a trilogy I had written about this hero, Randolph Wolfram, and I came up with that name roundaboutly, but I was working on a screenplay once with this, a girlfriend I had. Her brother-in-law is an editor at Paramount, and we were working on this screenplay about Beauty and the Beast, a real-life Beauty and the Beast story that takes place in a small town. And I thought of, you know, the big house on the hill?
Yeah.
Oh, Hubers or something. I don't know. Yeah. It's changed. I thought that would be a great Beast mansion because it overlooks the town. So I created this screenplay, and I thought the Beast's name would be appropriately Randolph, which in German means wolf, and then Wolf Shime, because I wanted him to be Jewish, because he would have a lot of money. Not to perpetuate any stereotypes or anything. But then when I... and
your
I
your imagination, so, you can make up what
yeah,
you
want. Yeah, so I had this character. I'd written this screenplay that is now nothing. It's just there. Randolph Wolfshime's the Beast. And then when I go to write, to put this together, I have all these other documents I'd written like a year before that, and I'm piecing these documents together, and I'm like, I need to come up with a name for my main character, for my hero, because I can't let it just be Nick Prettner. And so I said, well, it'll be Randolph Wolf Ram, because I had to be of a Gentile descent, and Shime is a Jewish suffix, so I changed it to Wolfram, and Ram is also my zodiac sign, so I was like, this is very appropriate. And piece these documents together. I spent a whole year, like, editing them, filling in holes where I knew there would be holes, naming the different sections. We have part one going somewhere, Genesis and Exodus, the two different sections. And then part two is who, what, when, where, how, but why. And the who is the devil, the what's the box, the when's July, where is it, the complex, how is by means of the sword, and the but why is just a question mark. Mm-hmm. Then the final section is called Arriving Nowhere, and there's the fall, World War III, the rapture, and the stairway to heaven. Mm-hmm. And so I put this together, edited this, and then I bought this typewriter in September of 2009, and I was managing a coffee shop at the time, and I decided, well, you know, I need to do something with this giant stack of documents. I need to write it all the way through, and what better than to do it on a typewriter, which is slower than a computer to write on and faster than by hand. So it's that perfect little, like, walking the Occam's razor right down the center. And my mom's like, I was like, hey, I need a quiet place to stay, I call her, to do this sometime this winter. I'm going to quit my job and move to New York. I'd saved up all this money. And my mom, Andrea, is like, well, you know, there's grandma's house over on Oak Street. My grandparents were in the nursing home at the time. My grandma had died. My grandpa was in the nursing home. Fully furnished house. And I'm like, okay, well, when do you... I didn't have a vehicle. She's like, well, me and your Noni, who's listening right now. Hello, Rihanna. Or we'll come and get you, blah, blah, blah. And so December 3rd, 2009, I moved all my stuff into this house on Oak Street in Hillsboro. Lived alone. Put candles up everywhere, decorated how I want, and I wrote this all the way through based on what I had compiled from the documents I'd already written, while also just, you know, changing things. There's sometimes when I'd write verbatim, and then some, you know. And I did that, and then I moved to New York on January 15th, and I looked back, and I realized that I was living in Hillsboro in the house on Oak Street for 40 days and 40 nights, and I didn't even plan it that way. It just happened to be like that, so... Anyway, that's the story of how that came about.
It's amazing how the human mind can pull various elements together, and
it was random, but planned.
But that's the great thing about the human mind.
Yeah,
it looks random. It looks like a complete mess of who knows what, and then all of a sudden, one or two things kind of click, and you start folding things in together.
Folding them in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like folding a blanket.
Sure,
that
sure.
Had gotten all...
Well, it was all wrinkled. It's all messed up.
Yeah.
You straighten it all out, and then you start folding it.
Yeah.
That's
and you
how
put
I kind of look at it.
Yeah.
The process.
Order.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Order, making order out of chaos. That's what, you know, it's funny how...
Is that basically the story? Is that the story
of how I did it.
Yeah.
I don't like to tell the story of what it's about.
Oh, well, no,
like
we want people
to read it.
We want people to buy the book, which is available at the bookstore.
Books and More in Hillsboro. It's also available on HolyGrailPublications.com, which is a company that I started. Mm-hmm. And the first book we published, the only book we published, is this one, Going Nowhere. And, yeah, so I don't know why. I called it Holy Grail Publications. Here's a little nice little tidbit.
Oh, okay.
You know who the Holy Grail is? Mm-hmm. It's you know, The Quest by Sir Gawain.
Sure.
The name of that novel was written in the 1300s. It's called Parzival. And the author of this, I didn't find out till after I called it Holy Grail Publications, is a guy by the name of Wolfram von Eschenbach. Wolfram.
You got to be kidding me.
No.
You got to be kidding me.
I'm not kidding you.
Isn't it wonderful how the universe works?
It is, isn't it?
It's wonderful, man. There's a lot of different things going on out there that we just don't know about.
Sorry, I hadn't ever actually really told anyone that, so I kind of wanted to.
Well, we heard it first here on the radio. Yeah. By golly, it's amazing. Nick, you look like you're enjoying life, man.
I'm trying. I have a big thing in my mind that I need to be doing, but I actually realized yesterday that I don't. But it's like something that is I can't stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I started this project that doesn't really go anywhere. And I've always called it Of Nothing is the name of it. And I can't, like, actually write anything right now that isn't very conceptual and theoretical and just sounds insane. So, I don't know. That's a struggle that I'm having. I started reading the newspaper every day to try to get back a more functional narrative structure so that in my mind. But
yeah. It's kind of like going back to the basics.
Yeah.
Fundamentals.
It really is.
If you want to use a sports analogy.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy, actually.
Yeah.
Like, you know, trying too many trick plays.
Yeah. In this job here, there are several different aspects, and I don't claim to be excellent at any of them.
Mm-hmm.
But once in a while, you have to do something a little bit different when somebody goes on vacation or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to kind of go back and say, okay, now, do this in the proper order here, and that'll get me through this job that I'm not really familiar with.
I think that's, yeah, anything is like that. You know, you get set in a certain way of doing something.
And then you get sloppy.
Yeah.
And then you have to say, you know, Terry, what a dummy.
Yeah.
You should know better than this. But that's just being part of human. Being.
It is. And who knows what could become of the slop, though, honestly,
yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy world, a crazy universe.
Yeah.
And the great thing about it is you are writing. You enjoy writing.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to suffer writer's block. You're going to have moments where you want to rip your hair out. But you're doing what you like. So.
Yeah, it hurts a lot, but...
Well,
must
that's
be.
Part of the healing process when you hurt.
That's true. Spend my whole life healing, I suppose.
Sure. you know, no matter what people do, no matter how hard parents try, there's always mm-hmm. trying times with their children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I'm speaking from experience. Things they don't understand, things that I didn't do a very good job of explaining. And mm-hmm. and you know, my kids have written about stuff, and it opens up my eyes, and mm-hmm. I'm glad that they're able to do that, because that helps them grow as a person, helps
yeah.
me grow as a person, helps me understand them, and basically I just say, you know, you take the best information you have at the time and make the best decision you can make.
Yeah.
May not always be the right one, but that's the decision you come up with.
Yeah.
At the time.
So. And you have to, if you're the one that's making the decision, you have to be prepared to face those consequences.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And
if you blew it, I blew it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But life goes on, so you pick up the pieces and move on.
And sometimes, I mean, even the consequences of the great consequences, you're like, wow, sometimes those are very difficult to face too. You know, very, the ones that like, I didn't think this would turn out as well as it did. Oh my goodness, help me.
Well, there's a lot of different things in life. People talk about the theory of chaos, the butterfly mm-hmm. flapping his wings theory, and I'm not smart enough to piece anything together. Although I tend to think that, like Newton's laws, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. That not only applies to physical, kinetic energy things, it's human energy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all part of
our
makeup here. So,
mm-hmm.
and you know, fortunately, I have, you know, I'm one of the lucky guys. I found a job that I like.
Yeah.
You know,
you're really good at it,
and,
too.
Well, I appreciate that, and I have fun at it, and I work for a good group of people and enjoy the people I work with, and a lot of times people will say, T, how's it going? I says, beats working for a living, man. It really does. beats working for a living. That's how much I like
yeah.
it. So, and I wish the same success to you, Nick. It's always good to see you, my friend. And we had some good times watching some of our favorite Lady Hilltoppers play basketball over the years. And those are wonderful memories mm-hmm. that we can share. And I'm glad you're writing. And I know what you're going through. I've got kids that
mm-hmm.
that are into that sort of thing. So
yeah. Well, you can pick up a copy on holygrailpublications.com.
Okay.
Holy Grail Publications, all one word.
All one word.
Books and More. It's called Going Nowhere. You can read some excerpts on holygrailpublications.com. We'll have some events planned in the area, more in the spring and summer.
And after you make your next mess and clean it up and write mm-hmm. another book, come back and visit us.
Yeah, give me about 5 or 6 years.
Well, if it takes that long, it takes that long. That's
yeah,
all right.
That's true. That's true.
Nick Prettner, our guest on the Wednesday Morning Talk Show. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you, Terry.
It's good to see you.
Mm-hmm.
Today's program brought to you by the Plummer Funeral Home in Litchfield.